So it's like the Wikipedia of maps. You can contribute your time to trace existing public domain maps so that you can contribute that information to the maps. Or if it's a new neighborhood and they don't have existing maps, you take your GPS unit, you walk around your neighborhood, your GPS unit captures all that data, you plug your GPS unit into your laptop or your computer, and you upload that trail to OpenStreetMaps, and you've now added your neighborhood or your walk around town to the big map, which is really cool. So what are some of the things that you can do with OpenStreetMap? It's kind of like Google Maps, except you notice when you use Google Maps, it says copyright Google. This is all Creative Commons, so it's open content, right? So one of the great things that happened was after the Haiti earthquake, the upper left-hand map is what they had on hand. There was a call out to people saying, relief workers need detailed maps of Haiti. They don't want to have to buy them or be beholden to copyright. Volunteers logged in. Within days, they had traced existing maps to give you a very, very detailed map in the lower right-hand corner in the Wikipedia method. Volunteers going on there and tracing maps, uploading their data that they have. So pretty amazing what they've done with OpenStreetMap. So some examples of how some works are high on creation, some works are high on curation. Wikipedia is a classic case of people taking existing content on the web, organizing it, categorizing it, and putting it into an encyclopedia. So it's high on curation, not so big on creation. Something like Flickr or YouTube, there's a lot of content generated, but not a lot of organization, right? Flickr's a pile of photos, YouTube's a pile of videos. That's what you see there. And then Twitter is kind of low on creation, low on curation, some stream of what you're thinking about. But then in the upper right-hand corner, we're suddenly seeing a whole body of content like OpenStreetMaps, where it's not just organizing the data that's out there, you're actually going out with your device and capturing the data out in the field. And that's a pretty significant thing that is challenging the accuracy and the dominance of folks like Google Maps. So what does this mean for journalism? So with this dynamic now, we see that journalism is no longer a lecture, it's a conversation, right? It's not just one entity blasting out the message to the masses, it is a back and forth that goes on between the audience and the folks who publish this information. Lawrence Lessig said this weirdly totalitarian communications of the 20th century is now yielding to this read-write culture. Like, let me look at that map, oh, I know more than that, I'll put my map data and contribute that to the body of work that's out there. Leo Laporte, who runs his podcasting empire in the United States, said mass media is not natural to the human condition. It's an artifact of a certain technological age, the age of broadcasting, radio, and television. Now we've gone to the world of read-write. And then Jay Rosen says the people formerly known as the audience, right? People are involved with the news cycle now. So just to give you the framework of what we're going to talk about, it is the classic information pyramid done by Bob Lucky, one of the original AT&T researchers in this area. And he basically said you start at the bottom with data, and as you start to form relationships between pieces of data, you get to information. You start to form relationships between pieces of information, you get knowledge, and then finally wisdom on this information pyramid. And what we've seen is that traditionally journalists have provided the whole stack, right? In the era before the internet, the newspaper delivered sports scores, weather data, financial data, stock prices. It also gave you photos, press releases. It also gave you editorials. So it gave you the whole thing from bottom to top. But what we see on the internet and user-generated content in the field with photos, with people making their own GPS trails, with people reporting the sports scores live on their cell phones, oh, the game just ended. Here's the final score of that soccer match. You're not waiting for your traditional news organization anymore, right? So those bottom two layers there are very, very much populated by the crowd. This has become commodity, it's become user-generated, there's multiple sources for this, and this is what's got the news industry in a panic, right? Is that they're no longer the sole controller of what's the bottom two layers of there. So what you really have to look at in terms of journalism values is where's the value of news organizations? It really is in the top two layers of this pyramid, right? It's in the editing, the research, the storytelling, and the curation of what happens at the top here. It also is the news values, right? Fairness, accuracy, balance, transparency. These are not things that necessarily the users at the bottom care about or understand, but journalists really do provide this value, and that's why even in this crisis of newspapers in the United States, we still have a lot of journalism students interested in journalism because they care about those top two layers of the pyramid. So it gets us to ask ourselves about what's true and what's credible. Right? We either have people, organizations, processes, or software that helps us get through the data and information to deliver some kind of truth value at the end of the day. So this is where I'm going to talk about content creation versus content curation. Because what we've seen is that citizen journalists are now part of the news gathering process, right? CNN iReport asks people to turn their iPhones into live streaming cameras for their folks back in CNN headquarters. YouTube and Ustream TV, and Cenk is going to talk a lot about YouTube today, which is great, because it provides a brand new channel for folks to directly talk to other folks on the internet. And then Flickr, Wikimedia Commons, a repository for multimedia information. And this is what citizen journalists are doing right now. But what's more interesting is the curation that happens, right? How can the crowd get involved with more than just taking a picture? And so here are some examples. We already talked about OpenStreetMap, but there's another project called NASA ClickWorkers, which was seen as kind of the original way of harnessing the crowd. And this project was really interesting because you had NASA with tons and tons of Mars data. They had pictures of Mars, but they needed to categorize how many craters were on Mars. And they realized that they hired 10, 12, 15 PhD or grad students in this field, it would take years and years and years of time. So what they did was they created a crowdsourced application. You could visit the NASA website, they'd throw up a picture in front of you and ask average people to circle the circles, you know, draw the circles that you see there and turn that pixel data into vector data. You don't need to be a scientist, you don't need to even be a really smart person, just do these things which are very easy. And just like Paul said, this is a breakdownable task, it's a modular task. I can ask you not to solve the big Mars question, but the question in front of you, circle the craters. And what happened was, the team of the folks on the internet did in 1 week what a single graduate student would have needed a year to complete. And that's really an amazing result because of the way that they broke down the problem into small pieces.